Ooh, I like that music, Mags. Some new stuff there. Had to switch up microphones and all that. Hey, NBA and NHL championship series are winding down, and I hope you are as excited about I am with Game 6 coming up in the Stanley Cup Finals today. Not so much about tomorrow's NBA Finals Game 5. Well, good morning to you, and welcome to another edition of Out of Line here every Sunday from 8 to 9 on the official home of the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. I'm Brian Feldman, and today I will be joined in studio for at least part of the show by my friend and a member of the Nevada Broadcasters Hall of Fame and host of the newest show on Fox Sports Radio, the Las Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnett, that will focus on hockey and obviously the Vegas Golden Knights. And here, as almost always, Magnum, future Nevada Broadcasting Hall of Fame member. We are coming to you live from the Fox Sports studio in Las Vegas, and we are streaming on lvsportsnetwork.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM and on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A. L-I-N-E. Go ahead and give us a follow. Without you, there's no show. So if you have an opinion or something to add, give Magnum a call and convince him to put you on. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University. Today is another off day for the NBA, as the finals will resume with Game 5 tomorrow night back at Oracle Arena in Oakland. The question I have is, are Zebras responsible for there being a Game 5? And the Stanley Cup Finals are back in Nashville later today for Game 6. The home team has won every game in the series, but the Penguins, who are coming off of that 6-0 waxing of the Preds in Game 5, have never lost a Stanley Cup clinching game on the road. They are 4-0 and won all of their Stanley Cups on the road. Something has to give today. Today's guest, as I already mentioned in studio, Lotus Broadcasting Hall of Famer Frank Harnish. After the first break, Steve Karp will join on the line. Steve is the Las Vegas Review-Journal's beat writer covering the NHL's Vegas Golden Knights. And for the first time, someone I have really been looking forward to having on, Nevada native Don Logan, president, chief operating officer, and 34-year franchise staple of the Las Vegas 51s, will be popping in a little later to help out with this week's Las Vegas 51s report. And stick around for a pretty cool blazing and fact this on tap at Bubby's University. Earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff, where the only majors are mayhem and good times. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. That's right, they are always open. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai, between Tropicana and Flamingo. To learn more, check out bubbysuniversity.com. Well, I wanted to get started before we get Steve online and ballpark. First of all, man, thank you for getting up on a Sunday morning before church and coming in and spend a little time here, man.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've actually been to church, so I figured, you know what, let's kill two birds with one stone, come in here, say hi to you guys in the morning and that, and then maybe swing over there. So, thank whatever you believe in for, finally some good things going on in my life, so I want to pay it back a little bit.
You know what, I think that's awesome, and some good things are going on in your life. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, and that is, of course, ballpark. Ballpark Frank is no more, and I just want to put that on. It's Frank Harnish now, a friend of mine. I've always known the name, and he is going to be hosting a show, as I mentioned, at the top of the hour, the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish. You're going to talk about that a little bit later. I definitely want to hear about it. I am honored to be getting to sit in with him on Wednesday. I'm really looking forward to it. Being from Detroit, dubbed Hockey Town years ago, I am a fanatical hockey aficionado, man. I love the sport, and I love watching it. I love seeing it, so we're going to talk about that in a minute. I just wanted to really quickly, before we take a break and go see Steve Karp, this NBA Finals, man. I mean, I've been saying since the playoffs started that, look, I'm not going to talk a lot about the NBA, because to me, the NBA season is going to be 4 to 7 games long, and it starts in June. And that's when the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors finally tip off. Other than that, I have no interest. Yeah, okay, San Antonio's a notch below. People think they could hang with Cleveland. Listen, Kawhi Leonard needs a lot of help. The bottom line is I'm watching this, and I told Magnum after the Boston Cavaliers series in that Game 4 in Cleveland, it looked like LeBron James. It reminded me of Space Jam. Like somebody came in and took the power out of LeBron James and put it in a basketball and hit it somewhere. Well, I just watched the other night something I've never seen before. I was watching 23 free throws in the first quarter. I mean, it was absolutely ludicrous what I watched. Whistle after whistle, and Steph Curry was getting mauled and couldn't get a whistle. What was all that, man?
Well, I think the officials figured out if we do it in the first quarter, people won't talk about it like they did years ago in the fourth quarter with Sacramento and the Lakers, so maybe we can kind of sweep it under the rug and it won't be noticed as much. The officiating's been horrible throughout the playoffs, but I completely agree with you. And it is a knock on the NBA. If you love superstar dominant teams, then you know what? Then maybe the NBA is your game right now. But the playoffs have been absolutely horrible. And before the preseason, before they threw up the first ball in preseason this year, is there anybody outside of some kind of catastrophic injury that did not expect Cleveland and Golden State in the finals? I won't say they got buys to the final, but they were so much head and shoulders above everybody else out there that it's kind of ridiculous. If you like that dominant teams, then fine. Then enjoy the finals. But the playoffs up till that point have been absolutely garbage.
Just the NBA so ridiculously top heavy, so marketed around LeBron James. Can you imagine if LeBron James pulled a Barry Sanders and just said, "You know what? I'm done." Oh my God, the league, the NFL could survive Barry Sanders leaving. The NBA could not right now survive LeBron James leaving because they would have to take Kyrie Irving. God, think of the team they would have to come up with to rival Golden State if LeBron left. What are they going to do? It's crazy right now. It is bothersome. I want to just ask you and put this out there. Mags, I'll bring you in on this. What do you think? Do you think there is any possibility? I'm listening to people try to create this drama. There's any possibility of Cleveland doing what they did last year?
No. Pretty simple. Golden State's not going to let the series go back to Cleveland. They're going to win game five, end it. They'll probably win in blowout fashion. The old saying is the bench always plays better at home than they do on the road. Cleveland's bench is not going to give them anything. In fact, I don't even know if all their starters are going to give them anything. And I'll win my bet, which was Golden State in five.
You know, it turned out yesterday what I learned watching the game, or I should say the night before last, was another Thompson was actually in the game, a guy named Tristan Thompson. I hadn't heard that name called, I think, all series, and all of a sudden he shows up with 10 rebounds. I mean, the whole game just stunk. Like, how is this happening, man? I mean, Tristan Thompson hasn't made his presence felt in the entire postseason, and all of a sudden he shows up with 10 rebounds in game four. And what's up with that, man?
Well, I'm just going to say this, because there's been a lot of debate, and people have been talking about it. How would this Warriors team stack up against some of the great teams of the past? They'd be favored by 6.5 or whatever over the 72-win Bulls team. Look, that's a debate for other people to have. The real issue is, as great as today's players are in the NBA, the product fails to deliver again and again and again. And it's not like the NFL. It's not like the NHL. It's not like baseball. Although we did have the problem this year in the NFL playoffs, a lot of people forget because the Super Bowl was so good. There were a lot of blowouts in the NFL playoffs this year, too. But it seems like it's just an issue the NBA is going to have. I'm one of those people who thinks there's too many players in the league. I think there's too many teams because the talent is watered down. And a lot of these teams are not drafting fourth-year college players. Instead, they're opting to go for the guy from Europe who's 19.
Right.
And they'll stash him over there for a couple years, hoping he comes back. I think that hurts the game. Because when you're not drafting guys who've played 4 years of college basketball, you're passing on guys who have skills. Even if they're end-of-the-bench guys, you're passing on that for a shot at maybe this Euro turns into Dirk Nowitzki, or maybe he turns into Gallinari. You're not going to get that every time. In fact, most of these guys that they draft in the second round are crap.
Mm-hmm.
So they pass on seasoned players, guys who've had good coaching for 4 years, and it hurts the league. I think if you're drafting those players, 3 and 4 year guys from college, as opposed to the 19-year-old from Spain who may not ever see a minute in the NBA, it waters down the product.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if it's totally just the guys from Europe, because the one and done in college for the American players is also something that can hurt the league, although we've seen youngsters going into the league forever. One thing that I think hurts it is the fact that you have guys making their own super teams today. When you can take a team that finishes second and loses in the NBA Finals because they blew a 3-1 lead and add one of the arguably three best players on the face of the planet to that roster, there's a problem with the salary cap and everything else the way it's supposed to work. And the ironic thing is, if Golden State doesn't blow that lead last year, who knows if Kevin Durant ever goes up there, because it had been back-to-back champions, and what can he prove going up there? Because they lost, he's like, well, now I can go help these guys win another championship. They created their own monster, thank you, Dr. Frankenstein, when Golden State lost last year, that made the perfect way for Durant to go and join that roster. And if they stay together and their egos can stay in check, this team could be playing in the finals and winning championships for the next 4, 5, 6 years, who knows how long. A team that loses a 3-1 lead in the finals gets to add one of the best players on the face of the planet. That doesn't happen in other sports.
No question about it. You know, the interesting thing is going to be, and I hear talk of this, if they lost in 4, maybe 5 games, would LeBron James start packing his suitcase again? And it's something to consider. I mean, he gave Cleveland their championship. I just wonder if he would. You know, and the bother thing is we got to go to break, but one of the things that bothers me, Mags, and you talked about this a second ago, is it drives me crazy, these comparisons. And when you listen to sportscasters on the different stations talk about the games, and would this, how would the 86 Bulls compare to the 2017 Golden State Warriors? People, it almost sounds like they think they're going to actually be a game one day. I'm listening to them, these conversations. Look, it's never going to happen. These teams will never play. They're never going to get together. These comparisons are ludicrous. They're fun, and they make conversation. And when we've got nothing to talk about, there's something to talk about. But they're never going to play. We got to go to break. Listen, out of line, we have on the other side of the break Steve Karp, Las Vegas Review-Journal, beat writer for the Vegas Golden Knights. Man, what a series. Game 6 is tonight in Tennessee, and trust me, Cinderella is alive and well. I hope you're not like some of my friends that after watching Game 5, they think the series is over. If that is the case, I will remind you, as I reminded them, that Game 5 was very similar to Game 2 when they were talking Pittsburgh sweep. The Predators went on to win the next two games at home, which is where they are today. It'll be a tall order to do, you know, to probably win the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's going to be tough to win at home and, again, to go back to Pittsburgh and win Game 7 there. But Pekka Rinne is a crafty veteran, and he is a netminder for the most part that has been playing as well as any of the great ones in this year's Stanley Cup playoffs. And joining the show now, the Las Vegas Review-Journal's first major sports beat writer, and that's Steve Karp. It's the first major sport we've had in Las Vegas, and he's the man who's been awarded the task of covering the NHL's newest franchise, the Vegas Golden Knights. Steve, I will pose this question to you. And Frank, what chance do you give the Predators of winning the final two games and hoisting the cup for the first time in franchise history? Go ahead, Steve. You first.
Me or Frank?
No, you go first. So I want to hear from both of you.
It's a tough order. You know, Pekka Rinne, as good as he is, he just played poorly in Pittsburgh. And even if they win tonight, to go there and win a Game 7 where home ice is kind of held sort of, not to mix my sports metaphors, but I think it's going to end tonight, to be honest with you. I just think the Penguins' momentum from the other night will carry over. And I just think they're better in leadership, and also their experience will get them through enough. Somebody will finally win on the road, and that'll be it.
Yeah, I think Nashville does have a great chance to win tonight. They've been incredible at home. And actually, when teams have lost by 6 goals in this playoffs, they're undefeated in the game following that. So teams generally bounce back after they get crushed like that. But the bottom line is, even if they do win tonight, I don't know how they win in Pittsburgh, because Pecorino, I don't know if he needs Ken Norton's old hypnotist from years ago or something, but he is a completely different guy out there. He looks lost on the ice when he's on the road. Remember, going into this series, he'd never beaten the Penguins before in his entire career. The first two victories he got were the games in Nashville. So, yeah, he looks great at home, and he's going to have to look great again tonight, but I don't know if he needs to do something different, change his routine, because you have to go with Pecorino. He's the reason that they're where they are, but in Pittsburgh, the whole team, they play dumber, they get stupid penalties, and Pecorino has been horrible.
You know,
hey, Frank, you just hit on it. You just hit on it. They're playing terrible in front of him in Pittsburgh, and that's been the problem. Not so much him as much as his guys in front of him are not playing as well as they do for the Nashville.
Absolutely.
So if Pittsburgh can solve it, then it ends tonight.
It could end tonight. I mean, I think I agree with you, Frank, that they have a better chance than average based on what they've done at home. But I will not count these guys out. I don't care if they go to Pittsburgh in Game 7 and everything is against them. That is the beauty of the National Hockey League, and that's what I've been talking about all year is, you know, and that Steve, I was going to ask you that. You heard me say that being from Detroit and all my years of being a huge fan and watching, working for, and covering the NHL, I have never seen a more entertaining Stanley Cup playoffs, nearly top to bottom. Where does this year's NHL playoffs rank for you?
Well, I mean, until this series, it's been great. But, you know, we've had a lot of lopsided games in the finals. But leading into the finals with all the overtime games and everything, it's been wonderful. It's been great for the sport. And I think it's something the NHL needs to really use to capitalize on and sell the game. And not just here in Las Vegas, but in everywhere, you know, and actually globally. They've got to think in global terms, much like the NBA does. That's the key for hockey. You know, it's huge in Europe. It's getting started in Asia. I mean, they've got to be able to market the game and sell it beyond its borders of North America.
No, I completely agree with you, Steve. And like you say, when it comes to marketing, they've had great opportunities this year, which they have not taken advantage of. Erik Karlsson playing all those games with two fractures in his leg, and if you're not a hockey fan, you didn't even hear about it. If that was an NFL player and an NBA guy out there playing like that, it would be all over the place. He'd be on every magazine, every news show leading of SportsCenter and everything, but he doesn't. It's just a hockey niche thing. It's like, oh, they're hockey players. They're supposed to be that tough. These kind of stories should be out there. They're not out there right now. Pittsburgh with the next man up mentality all through. I mean, they're about to maybe win their back-to-back championships, and a lot of people wrote them off before the playoffs even started when Chris Letang went down with an injury. Absolutely. There's been so many great stories, and the NHL does not capitalize on it and say, hey, everybody, look at us. That's what they need to do.
Hey, this is the same league that a week ago in Buffalo showcased five of its future stars to the media in a trailer in Buffalo, okay? That's where we interviewed Nolan Patrick, Nico Hischier, Casey Mittelstadt, Gabe Vilardi, and Michael Rasmussen in a freaking trailer.
Wow.
Are you kidding me? Sabres Arena is a beautiful facility. They had the entire concourse available. They could have done it in a number of places, yet they chose to do it. It was essentially a traveling museum, and it was dark and cramped, and it made no sense. But the more I'm around the NHL covering the league, the more I'm finding out how sometimes Mickey Mouse it is compared to the NBA, which, of course, I've been exposed to for many years with the Summer League and you know, with the Lakers and obviously all the UNLV players who played in the league. So it's a stark contrast. It really is.
We are talking with Steve Karp, Vegas Golden Knights beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveKarpRJ. Also, here in studio today, Frank Harnish, I got to get used to that, and of course, Magnum manning the big board. How about a couple of young guns really stepping up in this year's playoffs? Especially, no surprise here, since Edmonton's 20-year-old captain Connor McDavid burst onto the scene as a 19-year-old rookie in 2015, and this year won the Art Ross Trophy as the league's leading leading scorer. And how about this rookie, Jake Guentzel right now? I mean, who is leading the goal? Isn't he the leading goal scorer right now? I think he's got 13 goals. A bit of common hockey trivia. Guentzel scored on the first two shifts of his career. First two shots of his career, he scored goals back in November when he played the Rangers in his debut. Stephen Frank, I'll pose this question to you both. Are either or both of these guys the next superstar in the league, or are they all just all stars? What I mean, and since McDavid plays on Edmonton, I'll use this as an example. Wayne Gretzky and Yuri Curry. It's funny, my son has no idea who Yuri Curry is and how great he was, but it's because of how overshadowed he was by Wayne Gretzky and some of the other more dominating personalities on that Oilers team. But my question is, who are these guys? Are they Wayne Gretzky or are they Yuri Curry?
Probably both Wayne Gretzky, but that's not a bad thing. And if he's going to turn out like Curry, what about Jake Guentzel? I think Pittsburgh will take it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Hey, final thing is, real quickly, we got to go to break, but you said in that article last week, last Sunday, at the NHL Combine that you just spoke a little bit about, that the most important time of year is almost here for the Golden Knights as the NHL expansion draft is right around the corner. In their opinion, best case scenario, what direction do the Golden Knights go?
With their draft pick?
Yep.
George McPhee indicates they're keeping it, so I think they're going to look for scoring. And if Cody Glass were available, number six, they would look at him. If Gabe Vilardi is available at number six, they'll look at him. If Michael Masterson is available at six, they'll look at him. Maybe even Martin Nikas from the Czech Republic, who's a very good player. Not as highly ranked as the other guys, but an exceptional skater. And very good, has a very heavy shot. Maybe looking at him, but you're going to build through the entry draft. You want to find scoring. That's where they'll come from. So I think that's where they go. Now, whether they keep the pick or trade down or trade up, I don't know. George is keeping his cards very close to his vest, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, McPhee was saying there's been no offers. No one's even really approached him on the pick whatsoever at this point. So we'll see. Hey, Steve Karp, Las Vegas Review Journal, Vegas Golden Knights beat writer. Again, thanks for joining the show. Check him out in the RJ and follow Steve on Twitter at Steve Karp RJ. Steve, always a pleasure, my friend.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve.
We'll go to break. We'll come back. We got Blazin', we got Fact This, and we've got Don Logan. Frank, you out of here? Are you going to...
Yeah, I have to go.
Frank is going to worship, man. I respect that greatly, man. Good things happen to you. You give back, like you said. It's always a pleasure, my friend, and I look forward to seeing you on this coming Wednesday. And don't forget to make sure to listen to Frank's show. It is every Monday through Friday, 2 to 3 p.m., the Las Vegas Golden Knights Insider with Frank Harnish. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
I'm hot cause I'm fly. You ain't cause you're not. I don't know why I love that song so much. Hey, it is time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, a stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital, and they have two happy hours every day. It is America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports during football season. I'm there every Monday night hosting their Monday night football parties, and they're giving away replica jerseys, wing parties, wings, and a whole lot more. And it is time for Blazin', and my Blazin's pretty easy, Mags. I'll start with mine and give you a little time with yours, although I think you got yours already as well. But I'll tell you what, man, we had a kid on the show last week, John Oda, All-American, first-team Ping All-American golfer as a junior at UNLV, ranked sixth in the country right now, took UNLV to the Elite Eight in the nation this year. And John Oda, what he didn't tell us, Mags, is, you know, I asked him on the show, what he's going to be doing next. And we'll hear that in a second. And he didn't say a word about this. What does John Oda do to become, why he's Blazin'? Well, first, when I asked John Oda what he's doing next, this is what he said. So what's next for John Oda? I'm not as familiar with college golf as I am with the other major sports. When you were one of the best players in the country, do you leave school early and make a run at the PGA or Nike Tour? Or can you play in college and on the PGA Tour at the same time?
No. If you decide to turn professional, you lose your amateur and college eligibility. So you would not be able to play college and professional. So for me, you know, there's definitely been thoughts of, you know, turning professional. I mean, I was thinking about it since last fall and kind of weighing the options. I'm still in a in between and don't really know exactly what I want to do. But, you know, one thing is I want to get better at golf, and whether is that to come back and finish my senior year or to go turn professional right after summer, after Walker Cup, you know, that might be the best route. So, you know, I haven't decided yet. I'm staying amateur over the summer to play a couple of amateur events and try to make the Walker Cup, which is the most, probably most, it's like a Ryder Cup format, most prestigious amateur event. And there's a lot of opportunity there. So that's going on right now.
Well, I know we're wishing him the best of luck. He won two individual titles this year alone, four overall, and this year recorded 12 top 10 finishes, only three times this year in the tournaments that UNLV played in was John Oda not in the top 10. That is that's unbelievable is what I finished that up saying. You think about that in all the tournaments, only three times the kid doesn't finish in the top 10. This is Division I golf, like playing against the best amateur golfers in the country, and John Oda continuously finishes in what would be the PGA Tour, the money. So Magnum and I were talking a little bit about that during the break, and Mag's got a chance to, you know, listen to it again. We heard it last week live, but we both got to listen to the interview with John Oda again. And what he didn't tell us, and before you give me your opinion on it, Mags, what he didn't tell us when we talked to him last week is that he turned around on Monday and went ahead and played at Newport Beach, California. It was a qualifier that both him and Shintaro Band qualified for, went and played in this thing, and qualified for the U.S. Open. The kid turns around on Monday after he's on the show, Magnum. He scores, recorded a 36-hole score of 11 under. And Mags, the 36 holes were played in one day. 7 under 64 and 4 under 68. The kid turns around and shoots and qualifies for the U.S. Open. Magnum, I'm going to ask you one simple question. Will John Oda be back at UNLV and be an amateur at this time next year?
I would love to see him back at UNLV as a Rebel alum and a fan of the golf program. My opinion is he's probably not going to be back next year.
He's playing at Erin Hills in Erin, Wisconsin this next weekend in the U.S. Open, the 117th. What a great thrill for this kid. He was a really good kid. I was impressed with him talking to him. He also is an honor roll student at UNLV. And boy, glad he chose this place. And another great UNLV golf alumni heading out to the tour. And yeah, I would think after qualifying and heading to the U.S. Open, it's going to be hard to change John Oda's mind that it's probably time to turn in the amateur status and start making a little dough on the tour. I sure in hell would if I had that kid's games. Mags, the stats were so impressive, especially this year. This kid just went on, won two of the first four tournaments UNLV played in. He was the outright individual winner. This kid is flat out good. And would you say, Mag, that John Oda is blazing?
Definitely. He's definitely blazing.
All right. Well, that's my blazing, brother. I'm waiting for yours.
Well, they haven't been blazing for over 12 years, but they finally were blazing on Friday. You know my favorite sport, so you know where I'm going with this.
Oh, you always go soccer, baby, soccer.
They had not won a competitive match since October of 2004 when they beat Macedonia by a score of 1-0. Well, Andorra, one of the worst national soccer teams on the planet, they defeated Hungary on Friday in World Cup qualifying by a score of 1-0. Almost 13 years between wins. And let's be honest, Hungary, while not the greatest team on the planet either, they were in the European Championships last year. They're probably a top 60-70 club in the world. And Andorra probably ranks somewhere around 195. For them to defeat Hungary, not only does it basically destroy any hope or chance Hungary had at the World Cup, it's pretty cool. Jose Rubio scored in the 26th minute for Andorra, and they, after almost 13 years of futility, they get off the schneid and they defeat Hungary by a score of 1-0 on Friday afternoon in the beautiful capital city of Andorra La Vella, where I've actually been. Most people don't even know where it is. It's a tiny little country.
So somewhat of a Cinderella story, right?
No, they still suck, but
well, they got a Cinderella win.
But Their last two matches, they haven't given up a goal. So maybe their fortunes are changing. They're actually not even last their group.
Mags, if I'm not mistaken, didn't last year a team that started the season at 5,000-1 in the Premier League win the Premier League last year? Am I wrong about that?
No, you're right. That would be Leicester City. They were 5,000-1 to start the season, and they won the Premier League championship.
Does that say anything can happen?
It does, but not with Andorra.
Well, if I would have told you that at the beginning of last year and said, Leicester is going to win the Premier League, Mags, you would have said, Brian, what the hell are you smoking? Yes, you would have wanted to know what I was smoking and could you have some? Okay, period. I mean, the bottom line is that was absolutely incredible what we saw last year that team do. But, hey, that's Blazing Magnum, a good one. And Blazing brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. The two happy hours every single day. There's America's place for wings, beer, and sports. There is absolutely no place better. And again, during football season, I'm down there every Monday night hosting the Monday Night Football Party. And we give away replica jerseys, wing parties. Like I said, come on down, starting football season. It's always a great time. Monday Night Football at Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Well, it is time real quick for Fact This. And I wanted to talk about Fact This because the bottom line is, and hold on, I got to find my paperwork here because I had a good one for you if I can find where the heck I put it. Hold on one second. Let's see. Man, Mags, I had it here. And okay, wait a minute. Where's my Fact This? Because I want to come off. I want to go right off my sheet with this. And let me find it if I can. No, you know what? I'm not. Oh, here we go. You know, here's the thing, and I know who it was. It was Yoannis Cespedes came off the DL and looked walking around and standing at the plate like he had no business returning yet from 37 games he had missed in the last 6 weeks before because of a strained left hamstring. But none of that mattered because he went 2-for-4, including a ninth inning grand slam that gave the Mets a little spark after losing in a dramatic walk-off the night before. Also a fact, Cespedes has been clutch throughout his career, and he was a Detroit Tiger for a minute. This is what I think about that. When he is healthy, he can win games for a team by himself. Good for the Mets and bad for the Tigers. And as Forrest Gump would say, that's all I have to say about that. You know, what am I going to say? Yoannis Cespedes, he's back. He is definitely not 100%, but wow, 2-for-5. And if you saw the grand slam, it took him forever to get around the bases, which tells me he's probably playing at about 65%. But 65% of Cespedes is probably 110% of a lot of players in Major League Baseball. I think the guy's that good. I wish the Tigers had never gotten rid of him, but it's good to see him back with the New York Mets, and it should help the 51's big club because they need to get back on track because they are quite a few games under 500 right now, and it's just been all kinds of problems with the bullpen, their pitching staff, but they'll get it together, and they definitely have some serious prospects down here. They have some serious prospects down here that are playing at Cashman that are absolutely off the chart. And these guys are really good.
They do have some really good players.
Ahmed Rosario is an unbelievable shortstop. The kid's 21 years old, Mags. Yeah. He's going to be a star. The first baseman,
Dominic Smith.
Man, you want to talk about popping a bat. We were sitting right up front for a game. I went down and sat real close when Dominic Smith was batting. His forearms are the size of my legs, first of all.
Yeah.
And second of all, the torque. You know, you see a difference, especially AAA. It's really cool. You can see guys after a while. I've been covering them for about 4 or 5 years now, so I go to a lot of AAA games. You can start to see the difference between guys that are going to move to the next level and guys that aren't, Mags. And you can see the torque in Dominic Smith's swing where it is a major league. The setup is major league. The whole approach, the watching on deck, the fingers loose, the loose hands, he's got it all. This guy is scary, the potential he has with power. And Rosario, Mags, this guy's an acrobat defensively, and he can hit the baseball.
Yeah, every time I go out to catch Field, and unfortunately the 51s haven't been home too much the last couple of weeks. They will be coming home this week for a couple home games before they head back out on the road. But every time I go, I'm just more and more impressed with Ahmed Rosario. And I mean, he's a top five prospect in all of Major League Baseball. He is the Mets shortstop of the future. And I'll be honest, I've been going to Cashman Field for a long time. I mean, I've been in Vegas almost 20 years. So I've been going out there for pretty much almost 20 years. And he's probably one of the best players I have ever seen play for the 51s. I've seen, and I've seen a lot of guys.
That's that is saying a lot, man.
I mean, I saw Matt Kemp play for them. You know, we had James Loney
play
for them, who was down here for a long time.
We just saw Michael Conforto down here all last year.
And I'm telling you, there's something about Rosario. He can make every play. His range at shortstop is phenomenal.
You know what it is, Max? I'm agreeing with you 100% here. Watching him in a couple of the acrobatic plays, I wonder if he can stand still and do a backflip. Because doesn't it remind you a little bit of Ozzie Smith?
Well,
way he plays, he is a magician with his glove occasion. And you got to remember, he's barely 21 years old. How good is this kid going to be?
Yeah, I think it's, let's be fair. I mean, comparing anybody to Ozzie Smith in the field, but he's very acrobatic. Where I think he's a lot different than Ozzie Smith is that he can hit the ball. Ozzie Smith was arguably one of the worst hitting.
No, I want you to look back at his career. You will see something in Ozzie Smith. You pull it up, you will notice that it was like every other year. One year, Ozzie Smith would bat 212. The next year, he'd bat 305. But I think, what is his career home run total? I'm going to guess it's under 20.
I think his career is 8.
I was going to say, I'm going to guess under 20. He played a long time.
Actually, he's got, looks like 28 career home runs.
Okay, I said under 20. But what about, what's the career batting average, man? Higher than you expected, I'll bet.
About what I expected.
What is it? 280.
262.
That's really. I'd like to look at year by year because there are some years. I remember one year specifically in the 80s, he batted 302. And I remember it. The season batting average was 302.
His first couple years with the Padres, the first four seasons in the majors, his highest batting average was 258. He didn't hit over 270 until 1985.
Yeah.
That was already his seventh year in the league. So, I mean, he did hit 303 one year in 1987. That was also the year the Cardinals won the World Series. But I don't know. He's got a lot of years where it's hovering around 275 or so.
No, you're right. You're right. But you know what? He was a timely hitter. But, you know, players take longer to mature. He became a better hitter as his career went on, similar to the way Wade Boggs became a better fielder as his career went on. I remember when Wade Boggs first broke into the Major League Baseball. God, he was just, it was always a mystery when the ball got hit down to third base. By the time he got later into his career with the Red Sox and then as an old man with Tampa Bay, he could pick up the ball at third base.
I would go out on a limb here and say that Ozzie Smith is one of the few guys, at least in my lifetime, I can't go back and look at guys who played before I was born, but he's probably one of the few guys in my lifetime, taking pitchers out of the equation and catchers, of course, who got in to the Hall of Fame exclusively on his defense. I still think, Omar Vizquel was a guy who probably had a very similar career. I don't think Vizquel got into the Hall of Fame. I don't think he will get into the Hall of Fame, but, a very similar type of player.
But here's the thing with Ozzie, and would you agree with this? Ozzie Smith was so exciting, electric, proficient defensively that people would go to the ballpark because to watch Ozzie Smith play ball at times. Similarly, to go watch Barry Sanders. Now, obviously, there's a big difference between watching a running back in the NFL and a shortstop. But some of the things Ozzie Smith did out of the six hole, and when I say the six hole, the number six position on a baseball field, which is the shortstop, Magnum was absolutely spectacular. Some of the plays this guy made were, he was the only player maybe in Major League Baseball history that could make those plays.
And just to compare, Vizquel has a higher career batting average, has quite a few more home runs, more RBIs, less stolen bases, but, a guy who was really a really good defensive player who probably... And, to be fair, had Vizquel been born and played at the same time Ozzie Smith did, maybe he would have been in. He did come a few years later.
He helped Cleveland to their first World Series, didn't he, that they lost?
They lost, but his career started 10 years later than Smith. So had his career started in the 70s, maybe Omar Vizquel would be a Hall of Fame player. As it is, he's not. But he was really good with the Mariners. I remember him with Cleveland. Yeah. And, now the game has changed so much where – you have to be a phenomenal offensive player in order to even be considered for the Hall of Fame, with the exception of Craig Biggio. Craig Biggio, I think, was a guy who got in based on his consistency. And the fact that he was an all-star at multiple positions didn't hurt either. But, you know, I think going back to Ahmed Rosario, I'll stand by it. He's one of the best players I've ever seen play for the 51s, the Cashman Field. And, you know, if you haven't had a chance to go out and see this kid play, you're really missing something, because he's I don't see a scenario where he's down here in Las Vegas very much longer. Maybe a couple of more weeks, maybe a month or two. But I got to think once September comes, he will be called up and you won't see him playing in Las Vegas unless it's for, hopefully not, a rehab assignment. Because as a Mets fan, I don't want to see him back here ever again.
Sure you do. Next spring when the Cubs play the Mets. Hopefully the Mets will come and play here and they'll play the Cubs and you can see Rosario playing there.
That would be maybe the exception to the rule.
Okay, there you go.
But yeah, I mean it's Dominic Smith, another guy. You know, they have some good players. I like Nimmo. I like Chiquini.
Brandon Nimmo, let me tell you something. This kid is a flat-out hitter, Mags. A flat-out hitter is Brandon Nimmo. And you got guys, like you said, Gavin Chiquini. You got Kevin Plawecki, who has some pop to his bat.
And he's spent some time in the majors, Plawecki.
Chiquini has as well. You know, the guy I'd really like to see up, and we're going to talk more about him. As a matter of fact, hopefully next week I'm going to have him and his dad on together, is Chasen Bradford, a Las Vegas local guy that is getting to the point in his career at 26, 27 years old, where you got to get called up as a pitcher. And Paul Sewald finally got the call this year. The other local Vegas guy that was, him and Chasen Bradford in the pen a few years together. But I would say that the clock, that hourglass, Mags, is getting down to the last few grains of sand. And it really stinks because he is such a good kid. His dad's a great guy, and I'd love to see him get in the majors. But, you know, the Mets are going to call him up when they're ready. Real quick with Las Vegas 51s, again, they are finishing their road trip. They've been on a long, long road trip. They finish up today at Tacoma against the Rainiers, and then they will finally be back. They get a much-needed day off tomorrow, and on Tuesday they got a four-game series starting here against the Sacramento River Cats, and that'll be Tuesday night, and next Thursday, Dollar Beer Night, next Friday, fireworks again. So start planning ahead. 51s, man, some of the best time in Vegas. Mags, before we get out of here, I want to talk a little bit about your podcast. We haven't done that the last couple of weeks. Fill everyone in, man. Let them know where they can hear you and what's going on, because Mags is our soccer guy here at Lotus.
Yeah, it's called the Other Football Podcast, obviously a pun on the fact that soccer is also called football and
football
in other parts of the world. But this week we went through a bevy of World Cup qualifiers, something to watch for if you're a soccer fan, with a victory tomorrow. It will be tomorrow afternoon our time. Iran will be the third team to qualify for Russia 2018 with a few games to spare. I talked about that a little bit. They play Uzbekistan in Tehran. That's how deep I go. I talked about the Under-20 World Cup, which was actually won this morning by England, the first time they've ever won it. They defeated Venezuela, who knocked out the United States. It's just something that I really enjoy doing. I love the sport, and I'm very lucky that I get to really talk about it and go in depth with a lot. And, you know, it's summertime. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop doing it, though.
Hopefully that role will expand and continue as soccer continues to grow in popularity in the United States. And, hey, people are into it. Listen, I want to thank Frank Harnish for joining the show. I also want to thank Steve Karp, of course, always. Magnum, we'll do our best to get Don Logan on here in the next couple weeks. Jimmy Gemmel will hook that up for us. I'm Brian Feldman, and Out of Line is here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. And I'll borrow a line from my good friend and fellow sports broadcaster, Bernie Fratto. If you like the show, tell your friends. If you don't like the show, tell them anyways. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for your understanding. And I want to thank the crowd tonight, the people of Las Vegas who were here and